I'm Jim Peck. Welcome to I Remember. Joining me today is NBA coach Glenn Doc Rivers. In the year 2000, he received a top trophy named for basketball maestro Red Auerbach. Today, he coaches the very team over which Auerbach still reigns as president, the Boston Celtics. Let's take a look.
Glenn Rivers was a freshman at Marquette University in 1980. Hank Raymonds was the head basketball coach. Rick Majerus was the coach who gave him the nickname Doc after Glenn wore a Dr. J t-shirt to a summer basketball camp. A highlight of his freshman season was a half-court heave to defeat number 5 Notre Dame. During his time at Marquette, the team went twice to the NCAA tournament and once to the NIT. As a pro, he became a point guard, playing for the Atlanta Hawks, LA Clippers, the Knicks, and the Spurs. After 13 seasons as a player, Doc Rivers became a broadcasting analyst. 3 years later, he returned to the court as coach of the Orlando Magic. For the 1999-2000 season, he was the NBA Coach of the Year, receiving the trophy named for Red Auerbach. Doc became head coach of the Boston Celtics in 2004. He is also a member of the All-Star Advisory Council for the Junior NBA and the Junior WNBA, offering guidance for recreational youth basketball leagues. Doc Rivers is now a trustee at Marquette University, where his number 31 has been retired.
You look like you could still play.
Yeah, well, my body doesn't look or feel that way, that's for sure.
Certain parts get up slower than others, is that it?
Yeah, you know, I hear noises when I touch the floor in the morning, so I don't think I should be out on the floor.
Doc, how do you look at a player who's making $5, $10, $15 million a year and say, you're not doing this right?
Well, that's your job. You have to be honest. You know, just because they're making a lot of money does not mean they know how to play basketball yet.
Or but they think they do.
They do. And you want them to, actually. You know, confidence is part of the reason they're probably good basketball players. My job is to convince them that I'm just trying to add to what they already have and then try to get them to open up and allow me to do that.
Coaching is different from college to pros. I don't think you ever coached in college, did
no.
you?
No.
College always seemed to me as X's and O's. Pros, you're really more of a psychologist.
Well, I think you're a little bit of both. You know, in the college game, you have that kid's life in your hands, you know. So they tend to listen a little more when they're in college because they're trying to get to the NBA. Then when they get to the NBA, they tend to listen a little less.
Because they know everything.
Yeah, they know everything. But, you know, there was a study done by Harvard professors years ago. And the professors basically said that their top students only believe 50% of the stuff that they were saying anyway. So what I try to do is pick that 50% and get it right. And if we can do that, then we can work together.
It's also blending diverse personalities. I mean, you've got everybody on that team is an All-American, so everybody wants the ball.
Yeah, and that's the tough part. You know, in college, there's one All-American per team, rarely two. If it is two, they should win the national title, obviously.
Yes.
In the pros, everyone was the guy on their team in college, and now you're trying to get them to buy into a role. And sometimes that role is setting a pick, being a passer, never taking a shot, and that's a tough sell. You know, at the end of the day, it's a competition, and where I think our biggest job is to convince the guys that this is the best way to win the competition.
You left college a year early and went into the pros. Looking back on that, was that the right decision for you?
It was the right decision for me. You know, when I look back on it and where I went in the draft, I can say it was not. You know, you can make a case. If you go hardship is what they call it, you should go in the first round, and
yes.
I did not. So
was that a surprise to you, by the way?
That was, you know. At the time, if I'd come out my sophomore year, I was probably one or two of the guards picked. I didn't have a very good junior year. We were changing coaches here at Marquette, and so that worried me. And you know, what's strange is the coach that we were changing to is still one of my better friends. I just knew that there was going to be a lot of change, and I didn't know if I wanted to go take that gamble.
You, when you played, the three-point shot wasn't part of the game.
No, they were experimenting with it. I think my junior year, my last year, if you played a Big Ten team, they used a three-point shot. And if you played anyone else, they didn't. So I know we played Iowa that year, and we lost because our entire team was trying to shoot a three. We'd never heard of it. You know, we just wanted to see if we could make it. And I remember Coach Raymond not being too happy with our shot selection in that night.
Might you have stayed if the three-point shot had been in?
No, I don't think that would have changed, really. I was more of a point guard than a scorer, though at Marquette I was a scorer. Yeah. You know, when I came, when I went to the pros, I was immediately a point guard. I really played point at Marquette, even though I shot more, you know. So I don't think that would have done much for me.
Now, you had to go through the very change that we're talking about you having to do to people now, in a sense, that you had to go from being the man, the shooter, to dishing off to other players. Was that an easy transition?
It was. It was for me because we had Dominique Wilkins on our team. You know, I've always thought it's easier to sell your package if you have a guy clearly better than everyone else on your team.
Yes.
Dominique was, and, you know, he recently went into the Hall of Fame because of that. And so it was an easy sell for me. What was tough for me is when I went to the Atlanta Hawks, there were 8 guards on the team.
Wow.
And I had a non-guaranteed contract. So
just tell people what that means.
You know, non-guaranteed means if you don't make the team, you're out of the door.
And you don't get anything.
No pay.
Wow.
So that was, going into training camp, that was intense, obviously. It was, I knew this was the make or break year of my basketball life.
Hmm. And yet you came back for your degree rather quickly. Most players wait until they're done with their careers and then come back, Maurice Lucas and a few others that come to mind. But you came right back.
Well, I went to Marquette to get an education and to get a degree, obviously. I was a scholar athlete, and I was going to play basketball. That was the assumption. I knew I was going to play basketball. What I wanted was to get a degree and to do well in school and to learn. And so, you know, in my first year with the Hawks, I had already set up. I was coming back right after. I do tell people, you know, after that first year, I'm sitting there in summer school, and I'm looking at the professor, and, you know, you start thinking, well, I'll make more money than him. What am I doing sitting here?
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, well, I know why I'm here. He's smarter than me, and so I should be here.
That's funny. What was it like to be recruited out of high school? You were heavily recruited.
Yeah, that was tough. You know, I just went through it again with my son, and, you know, so I had some experience. But that's not an easy thing. I don't think people understand the pressure that puts on a high school kid. I still believe it's too much pressure. I don't know how you stop it or how you limit it. You really can't. If every college is recruiting you, they should have the right to recruit you.
And every coach needs to get that blue chip player, otherwise yeah. His job is not secure.
Yeah, and the ones who tell you that are the ones you should cross off. You know, it's funny. My dad told me that early on. I had several coaches say, if I don't sign you, I'm going to lose my job. You know, to tell a 17-year-old kid that when an adult tells that's very tough. Tell you what was the toughest part. You know, I narrowed it down to 3 schools, and I decided on Marquette. The toughest part for me is I'm 17 years old, and I have to call Ray Meyer,
from
Digger Phelps,
Notre Dame,
and Bobby Knight in Indiana.
Wow.
To tell them that I was not coming. And these are guys I looked up to my whole life, you know, my young life at that point, and it's tough for a 17-year-old kid to say no to anyone, and that was difficult for me.
Did they say, okay, good luck, or did they try to work on you some more?
Everyone was great. Digger was a little shaky, you know. Ray Myers was great, and so was Bobby Knight. He kind of knew it ahead of time anyway, and they both was phenomenal. Digger assumed that I was coming to Notre Dame, and so when I chose Marquette over Notre Dame, he basically said, you're going to regret that, and you know, we're going to beat you for 3 years. And so it was really neat. My first year there, I make a half-court shot, which was a little luck involved, maybe a lot of luck involved.
But that should have been an 8-point shot.
Yeah, it should have been. And see, no 3-pointer then, so I just got 2 for that.
But you won the game with that
shot.
But
we won the game, and for me, that was great.
It was half-court.
Yeah.
And the last second, and you sank that shot. Did you look over to the bench and wink at Digger?
Didn't have time. You know, that whole celebration thing was out of control. I proved to everyone I didn't know how to celebrate, because when I made the shot, I just ran into the locker room. I thought that's what you did. And I get in the locker room. I was the only guy in there, and I'm jumping around. There was no one in the locker room. So I come back out on the floor, and Michael Wilson is up on the basket. People were cheering. And I was thinking, wait a minute.
It's my shot.
I made that shot. So I missed it.
How did Marquette recruit you?
It was pretty easy. You know, they had me, before it started. They really did. I went to basketball camps up here when I was a freshman in high school. It was my first time I met Al McGuire, Rick Majerus, and Hank Raymond. They ran a camp called the Medalist Basketball Camp. And from that point on, I was going to Marquette in my mind, you know, if I was good enough. You know, when you're a freshman in high school, you're just playing basketball and you don't know if you're good enough or not. But that's where I wanted to go. The jerseys, you know, that Bo Alice created
those hideous jerseys.
Yeah, for a kid, they were so cool. And so you wanted to be in that. As a matter of fact, my high school went to those jerseys my senior year.
Really?
Yeah, so it was kind of a signal where I was going to go to school.
I was at a Marquette game. I think I'm correct in saying it was the only Marquette game, was considered a home game, but it was played in Madison, and Marquette played Duke. And someone pointed you out to me as a recruit. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I went to a game. I went to a bunch of games, as a matter of fact, you know, going up. And I just love Marquette. It was, you know, I'm a Chicago kid. And, you know, they say in Chicago you can only go three ways. You can go Marquette, you can go DePaul, you can go to Notre Dame. But you got to make a choice early on. And I made my choice pretty early, you know, with Butch Lee and Sam Worth. I mean, the history was so rich, and Al McGuire was so colorful.
Now, you didn't play under Al, though.
No, I didn't. I was his last recruit, for the most part. He and Rick Majerus and Hank really recruited me. Al would come when I would walk home from high school. My father owned the record store. You know, back then is when you had the little 45s and the albums, and which kids are probably saying, what is he talking about right now?
Yes, this is ancient history
for those of
you under 40.
And, you know, so when I would walk into the record store, because I had to work it after school, Al would be sitting there working behind the counter, giving, you know, serving albums and playing music, dancing like only Al could do. He had the gift of life in him. And this was after I had signed already. He was still coming. He just said he enjoyed getting away. And you know, that was Al.
He was his own man.
He was his own man. He was comfortable in his own skin.
You, for a while, were in the booth as a broadcaster.
Yes.
Did you like doing that?
I loved it. I thought it helped me coach, you know, because as a player, you play for 13 years, and the only system you know is your own. Mm-hmm. You know, you really never get a chance to look at other styles of play and look at other coaching styles. You just know the coaches you played for. And I played for great coaches. You know, I really did. Pat Riley and Larry Brown and Mike Fratello.
Wow, yeah.
So I was lucky in that. But sitting there for 3 years, and I was there for 3 years before I took the first job with the Orlando Magic, it really helped me. It changed some ideas that I had about the game, and it formed my thought to go into coaching. I knew I was going to coach.
You did?
Yeah, I wanted to coach from the day I got in the NBA. That I knew my next step was that I wanted to coach basketball. Pat Riley would tell me that every day. You know, you're going to coach. He, you know, the rumors about me going into broadcasting were starting. And he just said, you can go there, but I'll guarantee you're going to end up on the bench. And I always denied that, but I knew where I wanted to go.
What was it about coaching that was so attractive?
I like teaching. I love teaching kids basketball. I'm competitive. And if your body doesn't work anymore, you have to find a way to compete. And coaching is the same thing. You know, you're still in the fray. And I wanted to be in the fray.
Talk about, you mentioned Pat Riley, Mike Fratello,
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown. Compare those three.
Complete different.
All right, contrast them.
Yeah, they really are. It's what's amazing is they all are great coaches, mm-hmm. yet they all have completely different styles.
Very successful.
And it tells you that there's no one way of doing things. You know, Larry Brown is the practice guru, is what we called him. As a matter of fact, one time he told me he hates games. If it was up to him, he would just practice every day. He loves teaching. He loves, you know, the fundamentals. He thinks there's a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things, and he's going to work with you until you do the right way.
Which is his way.
Which is his way.
What about Riley?
Riley is a motivator.
I always thought Riley was a lot like Al.
He is. You know, Riley, X and O's is good, mm-hmm. but it's his ability to get you to believe in what you're playing for. You know, he convinced us when I was with the Knicks, we were playing for a title, We were convinced we were going to win the title. Never thought we were not. And then Michael Jordan had something to say about that. But I thought he was the best motivator that I've ever been around in my life in any aspect, coaching, business, or anything. He's a great motivator. When you think about it, there's 82 games a year. You know, that's 82 pregame speeches. Most players have heard them all. Riley was an original. And then, you know, Mike Fratello was a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. We played defense all day, all practice. And for me, that was great because that's what I excelled in.
You became a coach in Orlando, became coach of the year, which was fantastic. And you got fired.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, being coach of the year is far better than getting fired, I can tell you that. You know, in our league, if you're there 4 and 5 years, and this was going into my fifth year, and every year we had the injury problem with Grant Hill, which it was never Grant's fault. His injury was just something you couldn't plan for. It killed me. It killed me every year, you know, because we planned on him, you know, being our best player. You know, and Tracy McGrady, fortunately for us, became our best player. But, you know, to have just one and that two was difficult. And going through that for 4 and 5 years, eventually you're going to lose your job.
You saw it coming.
Oh, I saw it coming. I saw it coming earlier than I think they saw it coming.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, you have to, when you're not a great team, a coach has to push every day to get everything out of you. If you do that 4.5 years in a row, eventually there's not enough, you can't push anymore. You've pushed them to the edge.
Do the players burn out or do you burn out?
I think a little bit of both. Yeah. I think in that case, it was definitely probably a 50-50 thing. You know, the best part about that job is every coach, every player, I'm still very close with. You know, in the summers they come over my house. And so that makes me know that I was doing the right thing. We just didn't have the right tools.
I hope they bring the food. I mean, they're all making a lot of money.
They really should.
Yeah.
But they don't. But they should.
Go back as an NBA player. You're in the All-Star game. If I remember correctly, you're standing next to Michael Jordan in the introduction.
Yes.
And looking across at whom?
Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, it was an amazing thing. It's what I've, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you a story. I've always wanted to make the All-Star team until I was on the All-Star team. You know, it was a great honor. Don't get me wrong, but I was sitting there, and I've always been taught to be a team guy. And I was thinking, where's my teammates? All my teammates were back in Atlanta, except for Dominique. And I always thought that as much as I wanted to be on the All-Star team, that moment I told myself I'd far rather win a world championship because then you share that with the people you practice with every day. And the All-Star team, you really don't. They take you away from your team, and they put you on another team for one day.
But what a team.
It was a great team. And the best part was it was in Chicago where I grew up, and it was a competition then. Now it's become a show,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Then I remember at halftime we were down, and Michael Jordan came in, and it was a profanity-laced halftime speech, not by our coach, Fratello. It was by Michael Jordan, and his whole thing was, I'm not losing in my own building. And he says, you guys better pick your game up. And it was an amazing thing.
Thank you for cleaning that up.
Yeah,
by
the way. I did.
You almost went there.
He didn't say it that way, I can tell you that. But it was really nice. And I actually showed that to our players, just the defensive edits of that game. And they were laughing how hard we were playing. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, you guys know this was an All-Star game? And I said, it's still a competition.
It's got to be. And you, I mean, you're all competitors. You've been competing all your life. And it may start out to be an exhibition. But sooner or later, somebody's going to bump you. And
yeah, and you're on national TV. Mm-hmm. I was a defensive player. And so, to me, I made the All-Star team because I passed the ball. I played a role. And I defended. So I'm not going to go to the All-Star game and then stop defending. Mm-hmm. You know, and edges are very important in our game. And to me, even though we were not going to see these guys a lot, my thought was I can't give the guy I'm playing an edge so he thinks he can actually do that to me in a regular game.
Yeah. you work for maybe the biggest legend in all of basketball. That's Red Auerbach.
Yeah.
Is he still pretty much involved with the team?
He's not involved much at all now. He lives in D.C. You know, people don't know he lived in D.C. through his whole coaching career. You know, most people thought he lived in Boston. He never lived in Boston. But I talk to him a lot. He's a great mind to talk to, obviously. He's probably the best coach in the history of the game.
How many championships?
Well, they have 16.
16.
And it would be nice to get 17.
Wouldn't it?
It would be very nice.
I could root for you as long as you're not playing the Bucks.
Well, I can handle that. I can take that.
So two losses a year?
That's 80 times a year. That's not bad.
Yeah, that works.
But Red is he has a great mind for the game. He has a way of telling you things without ever stepping on your toes. You know,
he doesn't come in and say, "Look, kid, I know how to do this."
He really doesn't. You know, and it's funny because I thought that's probably what he did. Mm-hmm. I think the assumption is that's what all the great ones do, and he does not. He'll call me and ask me, you know, "What do you think, kid?" And so we talk a lot on the phone. He's become a very good friend, and I love, of all the part about coaching the Celtics, you know, Cousy and Russell and Havlicek, my favorite part is that I have a relationship with Red Auerbach.
Does he still smoke those cigars?
They've banned him from it.
That's not what I asked.
But he still gets a puff here.
He sneaks one in.
Yes, he does.
That was always the thing, and I was a great Celtics fan back in those years. When he felt they had the game, even when he was a coach on the bench, he would lean back and he'd take out that big cigar and fire it up, and the whole house would go nuts.
Yeah, well, you know, as a player, my goal, because at that time he was no longer coaching. Mm-hmm. He was a GM. But he still lit the cigar.
Yes.
And whenever we played the Celtics, our goal was to keep the cigar in his pocket.
there was another. Oh, of course. The GM there is Danny Ainge.
Yes.
You played against Danny Ange.
I couldn't stand him.
I was.
I really couldn't. I didn't like him as a player because he wasn't a dirty player, but he was a physical player.
He was pretty close to a dirty player.
And he was a brat. You know, everyone thought of a brat. He whined every game. He whined.
Never committed a foul.
And it's funny, the All-Star game is where I got to meet him. We sat next to each other on the bus going to a practice.
Did you try to sit a little bit away from him?
I tell him all the seats were taken. I tell him to this day, trust me, if there was another seat, I would have never sat next to you. And we started talking and hit it off. And from that point on, we had a really good friendship, and so it probably is what led me to Boston.
Why didn't he make it as a coach?
You know, he was doing a good job as a coach.
I thought so.
He made a choice family. You know, he told me he thought coaching was changing his personality, which I can understand. And it does at times. It can be a negative thing, coaching.
Because in what way?
You watch film, and when you watch film, you're not really looking for the positive stuff. You're looking for the negative stuff so you can change it. And it can turn you into that type of person if you're not careful. I have an assistant coach who, you know, I've had since I've been coaching, Dave Wool. And I have him and another coach put a plus or a minus index card on my desk every morning. You know, and what it tells me, if I've been positive or if I've been negative the day before. And because I really try to guard against that. You know, I think two positive compliments, almost 3-1 to 1 negative is the route I try to take.
Is there a risk of bringing that home with you and becoming that kind of a person?
Yeah, it is. And that's what Danny said, that he thought he was starting to become. You know, he was noticing all the bad things. He was barking out orders, you know. And
that wouldn't go over well with your wife.
That would not go over well with my wife. I know that.
You've got a son that just started in at Georgetown.
Yeah, he's a freshman at Georgetown, Jeremiah, and I'm really proud of him.
Why didn't you come to Marquette?
I don't think he wanted to follow me, you know. And I told him, "You're going to be much better than me. At least I hope." So go.
Is he that?
It was a tough one. I was pushing. I wanted to stay out of the recruiting process with him, just kind of watch. But I wanted him to go to Marquette. I was biased, and I love Tom Crean. I really do. I think he's not only a special coach, and I do. I think he's the best coach in college basketball.
Really,
but he's a special person. I think he does an amazing amount of work with his kids on and off the floor as people. So I saw all that, and that was tough for me to let him go anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tom and I were talking, and Tom said after recruiting him for a while, he said, you know, I really don't think he wants to follow your footsteps. And so I kind of backed off at that point and let him make his own choice. And I was happy with the choice he made.
Is he that good? I'm going to ask you that in 30 seconds.
You know, I don't know is the answer. That'll be up to him. I joke with him, and I said, the difference between you and I is when I open the refrigerator, I could see the light because there's no food in it. When you open the refrigerator, it's full. So we'll see how hungry you are.
That's a great way of putting it. It's a great ending note for this. Doc, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for being with us. As always, it's so nice to have you here, and I hope we'll see you next time as we continue to remember. Thank you.
Thank you.